The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as the fatalities of Palestinians now are over 27,000 in the continuous Israeli genocide on Gaza, the United States Congress is set to vote to increase Washington's support for the regime. Next week, the House of Representatives will vote on advancing more than $14 billion more dollars in military aid to the Zionist regime. So is it that Washington's answer to the Zionist genocide is to up the ante and give the regime more weapons and support in order to kill more Palestinians? Well, we will look at this and other questions on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria out of Manchester. And Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator of Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, I'd like to start off with Charlotte. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, Charlotte, nearly 27,500 Palestinians have been murdered since October, with many instances of massacres, torture, and crimes against humanity. It's so mind-boggling that this genocide is continuing. Your thoughts on why the world has failed to stop this genocide?
One of the things that's been very clear since October 7th and beyond is that the imperialist powers like the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Canada are lined up arm in arm to prevent the Palestinian people and their resistance and the resistance forces in the region from realizing their goals of the liberation of Palestine and the liberation of the region from U.S. imperialism. And that they see in the growing strength of the resistance forces an existential threat to this regime of plunder, domination, and subjugation, which they've imposed upon the entire region for decades and indeed centuries. And so when we talk, when we are saying this, we're not just seeing like a failure on the part of world agencies. We're seeing a very explicit and deliberate genocide being carried out by the Zionist regime in league with these states, with these countries that are fully complicit in this ongoing genocide and are doing everything possible to make it last longer and be worse for the Palestinian people. I mean, this is why we're seeing the United States and its allies bombing Yemen, Iraq, and Syria. This is why we're seeing the United States talking about shipping $14 billion of new weapons to the so-called Israeli regime on top of the $4 billion that they already send on an annual basis. Now, on the other hand, what we're seeing is an unprecedented level of resistance involvement from forces in the region, and we're also seeing an unprecedented level of popular support for the Palestinian people and absolute abhorrence of this genocide being conducted by the Zionist regime. I think more people than ever around the world recognize today that Zionism is racism and are willing to go out in the streets, are willing to take risks, to get arrested, to protest, to organize, to face down Zionist intimidation and smear campaigns, because people cannot sit by and allow a genocide to take place, especially in their name and with their tax dollars.
Yes, indeed. And you talked about with the United States and giving more weapons. Would you say in reality that it's the United States which is actually at war with the Palestinians?
Well, you know, yes, the United States is at war with the Palestinian people, and it has been. I mean, for over 75 years, the U.S. has always backed and supported the Zionist colonization of Palestine. It took over as the primary sponsor of the Zionist colonial project in the region, and it has armed and funded it since that time. I mean, U.S. officials have, you know, routinely referred to the Zionist regime as essentially an aircraft carrier for the United States in the region, said if there isn't an Israel, we'd have to create it. And why? Why would you have to create it? In order to serve the interests of the United States, to divide the Arab people from one another, to divide the peoples and nations of the region from one another, and to impose this essentially this military garrison in occupied Palestine in the heart of the region. And so this has always been a U.S. war on the Palestinian people. This has always been an imperialist war on the Palestinian people. And that's why it's the U.S.'s weapons that are causing the destruction and devastation that we see today. And it's also the U.S.'s weapons that are being destroyed by the Palestinian resistance.
Now, hopefully our other guest, Peter, will be able to join us. So far, we don't have him. But I'm going to stay with you, Charlotte. You talked about, on the one hand, hopefully Peter will join us in a minute. He's just coming in, and hopefully everything will be okay. We'll test the audio and everything. But staying with you a bit more, Charlotte, you had talked about, actually, that you've seen, on the one hand, we talked about the United States and what it is doing. On the other hand, you talked about the resistance and how you haven't seen so much as far as people becoming more aware of the Palestinian situation. I want to talk about your personal experience, because you are an activist in Canada, and what you have seen since October 7th there.
Cool. What we've seen is a really sustained mobilization and just a really large scale anger and commitment to continue to act, and a real outrage at the Canadian government, at Canadian officials and institutions that continue to behave in a mechanism that is completely complicit with the genocide, while the vast majority of people here are demanding that they stop doing it. I mean, there, time after time, poll after poll showed that the majority of Canadians, at the very least, want a ceasefire and the U.S. and Israel to stop bombing and attacking Gaza. So what does the Canadian government do? Instead, it goes and participates in the U.S.-UK assault on Yemen. Goes about defunding UNRWA. These are not things that are supported by people on the ground. And that's why every single weekend, and for that matter, every single day, there are demonstrations of thousands of people in all of the major cities and hundreds of people in many towns throughout Canada. People fundamentally are appalled by the very reality that they see of what Zionism is.
Okay, there's, and that's no quite amazing, especially in the cold of Canada right now. That's actually quite impressive. Well, Peter, I'm glad you joined us. Peter, in November, Congress allocated $14.5 billion more for the Israeli genocide, and now set to vote to give even more money to the Israeli regime. I mean, why is this the case when the U.S. itself has a growing poverty problem and a crumbling infrastructure, and their own people are definitely under pressure? So your thoughts on that side of things.
It's a very good question, and many Americans themselves are asking that question. Why is America funding Israel to the tune of billions and billions of dollars to carry out the genocide, while folks back home in America hardly have enough to live on, and the infrastructure is crumbling? And the answer, of course, is politics and money, especially in an election year. The bottom line is that Biden and all the leading candidate are dependent on the pro-Israel lobby. If the pro-Israel lobby turns against them, they are finished. And so it goes on time after time. This is not about American interests. It's about Israeli interests. The ordinary people don't get a say, especially when the mass media, the mainstream media, are so one-sided. Just today, new evidence has emerged of how biased CNN is from the very top. Ordinary CNN journalists are protesting because they're not allowed to report impartially, but they get orders from the very top of CNN to present only the Israeli point of view. So it's no wonder that American support for Israel is so one-sided.
Well, let me just jump in here, Peter. You said something interesting that because it's an election year, well, one would think because it's an election year, then actually if the people really had power to elect who they wanted, that the genocide would be stopped immediately since the majority of people are not pro-genocide, and that because it's an election year, they would the politicians would try to appease the people more. But what you have said about the Israeli lobby, do you think that just really says who controls not only the elections, but Washington politics in general?
Well, when all the candidates are pro-Israel, the people have no choice. You know, the choice is being pro-Israeli, very pro-Israeli, or most pro-Israeli. You can't be pro-Palestinian in the U.S. presidential and congressional elections. It's very simple. The ordinary people have no choice. But the polls show that many younger people in particular, and in particular people who would lean towards the Democrats, are disgusted by Biden's effective support for genocide. And it may well be the case that they will simply abstain. They will vote with their feet by staying at home. And this is something that even Biden has to pay attention to. And this is why America pretends to be concerned about Palestinian lives, pretends to be supporting a Palestinian state. That is just to appease those young Democrats who are not going to vote for Biden. But it's all theater.
Well, Charlotte, if the mentality in the West is to support genocide, is there a middle ground that people in West Asia and the Global South can have with this perspective? Or basically, are we on a continuous crash course with the rulers of Western hegemony and the Global South?
Well, we're on a crash course with imperialism and Zionism. And it's really clear that, you know, but one of the things that's actually hopeful is that we're seeing these very large numbers of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people in the heart of the imperial core saying, no, we stand with the Global South, not only saying, you know, we want a ceasefire now, but we support the Palestinian resistance. And this is something that's increasingly clear. And what that means is that it's not possible for these states to, for too long, sustain this ongoing war machine targeting the Palestinian people and targeting everyone in the region. But the fact is that these imperialist forces have shown time and time again that rather than, you know, attempting to sort of preserve some form of minimal peace in the region, you know, where they engage in pressure campaigns, but they sort of pull back the attack dogs of the Zionist regime from like this extreme genocide, they're not doing that. They've had months and months and months to do that. And rather than do that, they're passing a bill to send $14 billion more weapons to continue the genocide more effectively with more bombs and bullets and destructive force. So there's no mechanism by which these forces become supporters of, you know, peace and justice and a future for people in the region. Instead, they have to be defeated, and they're on the road to being defeated.
Well, Peter, It is not only Gaza, but also the occupied West Bank, which is experiencing extreme violence from the Zionist regime. Young and old, male and female, are arrested, tortured, and killed by the regime. Now, with this type of entity and this type of violence against the people, what option does the Palestinians have except resistance against this apartheid regime? How do you see it?
Personally, I feel they are being given no option other than armed resistance. I myself, when I was a diplomat in the British Foreign Office, worked on the Middle East peace process in the early days, and high hopes were alive then and for a number of years afterwards. But for at least the last 10 years, it has been obvious that peace talks, the Middle East peace process, is just theater, just a charade, not serious. In fact, it's been just a cover for the Israelis to increase their land grabs and to absorb more and more of the West Bank. You cannot blame the Palestinians for concluding in these circumstances that talks about two-state solution is just a cover for the Israelis to grab more land, for the settlers to come in ever greater numbers. And talk of going to international courts, it's good in a way, but it's not going to deliver Palestinian rights. So you can't blame Palestinians if they feel they have no recourse but to take up arms or to support resistance groups like Hamas.
You said, Peter, staying with you, you said that it's been the last 10 years specifically that you haven't believed that the goal is actually peace. What about from the very beginning of the peace talks? Do you think from the very beginning it was a plot by the regime just to delay the inevitable, which was for them to steal more Israeli property?
Well, historians will argue about this. Certainly, I had the impression, being heavily personally involved right at the beginning, that it was serious, that on the side of the Israelis at that time, and in particular the Rabin, that there was a serious intention to move forward towards allowing a Palestinian state to come into existence. But we know what happened to Rabin. He was assassinated by Israeli fanatics who then more or less altered the peace process and made it eventually into just a cover story while they got on with occupying and quietly annexing the West Bank.
Okay.
But in the first few years, there was, I think, genuine hope. But those days are long gone. There is nobody like that today. There is no partner for peace in Israel today.
Okay. Well, Charlotte, do you think the Israeli regime can recover from this genocide it has committed and its total military failure in Gaza, where none of its goals have been met?
In the long run, no, absolutely not. I mean, this genocide that's being carried out as part of the death knell of the Zionist project in occupied Palestine. And we're seeing this also in the way that while Palestinians have come together, united, forged a very strong sense of national unity, uniting around the resistance, standing together against the genocide, what we see on the Zionist side are every politician for themselves, every political figure scrambling for influence and power. We see the blatant fascists, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, proudly declaring how they're planning to steal more Palestinian land in the next days. We see Netanyahu determined to kill as many Palestinians as possible so that he remains in power and out of jail. We're seeing this and the absolute exposure of the reality of what Zionism is and what colonialism in Palestine means to everyone around the world. For so long, the Zionist regime has maintained this illusion of the impenetrability and the strength of its army and its military that it can't be defeated. But what we're seeing right now is that the Palestinian resistance under siege for over 17 years with weapons that they've manufactured themselves, defeating this so-called undefeatable army. Instead, all that the Zionists are able to do is drop bombs and kill civilians. And that's a reality of a dying project, a settler colonial project that is failing and coming to its end.
Well, Peter, do you think with the U.S.-supported genocide that not only has Washington lost credibility worldwide, but it is being scrutinized more by its own citizens as they question the country's militarism can ultimately cause more pressure inside of the United States itself?
I'm not optimistic, I have to say, because of the deep forces which control U.S. politics. I mean, Congress is the best parliament that you can buy. Senators, congressmen, it is well known, are easily bought. And this situation is not going to change. Whatever the people want is secondary to the forces that support militarism, and of course the arms manufacturers play a huge role here. And this complex was identified by President Eisenhower 80 years ago, when he spoke about the military-industrial complex which Americans had to beware of. Well, it's still there today, only it's expanded to include the media, big high-tech, and academe, universities.
Mm. Yes, indeed, indeed. Well, Charlotte, there are no sanctions on Israel and no no-fly zones that have been implemented to stop its genocide. What the regime has is the total support of the Western Front of hegemony. When this is the reality, what would you say is the responsibility of the anti-genocide front?
The responsibility of the anti-genocide front in all of its forms, in all of its places, whether that is the resistance that's fighting on the ground, whether that are states that are working to hold the Zionist regime accountable in international courts, and whether that's our popular movements on the streets around the world, is to do everything possible to bring this genocide to an end and to support the liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea. And that means confronting not only the Zionist regime for its direct genocide on Gaza, but the United States, Britain, Germany, France, Canada, and all of the partners in the attacks on Yemen, on the attacks on Iraq and Syria, on the attempts to fundamentally destroy the region's ability to stand together and stand for itself and be free of colonialism, hegemony, and external domination. And this is a responsibility of all of us. That means building our boycott campaigns. That means getting in the streets. That means confronting arms manufacturers like Palestine Action is doing. Every single person can play a role in a united front against genocide that spans across the globe and stands together with the Palestinian people and their resistance on the front lines of struggle.
Well, thank you both for being with me on this spotlight. Peter Ford, a former British ambassador to Syria, out of Manchester. Charlotte Cates, international coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, out of Vancouver. And thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thank you for myself and other crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 62nd verse of the chapter.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. إنما المؤمنون الذين آمنوا بالله ورسوله وإذا كانوا معه على أمر جامع لم يذهبوا حتى يستأذنوه إن الذين يستأذنونك أولئك الذين يؤمنون بالله ورسوله فإذا استأذنوك لبعض شأنهم فأذن لمن شئت منهم واستغفر لهم الله إن الله غفور رحيم.
The believers are only those who believe in Allah and His Messenger. And when they are meeting with Him for a matter of common interest, do not depart until they have asked His permission. Indeed, those who ask your permission, O Muhammad, those are the ones who believe in Allah and His Messenger. So when they ask your permission for something of their affairs, then give permission to whom you will among them, and ask forgiveness for them of Allah. Indeed, Allah is forgiving and merciful.
Regarding this beginning part of the verse, dear listeners, we said that it is really important to care about the existence of a godly leader in the society. And the purpose of the Quranic phrase Amrin Jami'in was mentioned in the previous episode as well, because Amrin Jami' is some common errand and an important affair that requires collective action, that necessitates gathering of people, that necessitates cooperation of different parts of the society, requires their help. So whether this issue is crucial matter or not crucial, this matter requires collective action. This matter requires a gathering of people to be discussed. So, if some commentaries interpret this word, this phrase, Amrin Jami', as consultation about holy war, or Friday prayer, or feast prayer, or any other thing, they are referring to one part of the meaning of this phrase of the verse. So, and this is in fact very important to notice, because this is a very important disciplinary order, because no part of the society, no united group can ignore this, because the absence of one person can cost damage, especially when the head and master and chief of the people in question is a lost messenger. And this is a very important spiritual leader. Paying attention to this matter is important, that the purpose of taking permission is not that everyone takes permission superficially and goes after his own job and prefers his own personal affairs over the order of the Prophet, but he must really take permission. That is, if the leader sees that his absence is insignificant, he permits him to go. Otherwise, he must not go. And sometimes he must forfeit his personal and private job to a more important aim. That is why, following this matter, the Holy Quran adds, implying that those who ask you permission and their belief in Allah and His Messenger is not a mere oral one, but they obey you and Allah's commandment with their soul and spirit, then you are allowed to give them leave. The verse says, فَإِذَا اسْتَأْذَنُوكَ لِبَعْضِ شَأْنِهِمْ فَأْذَنْ لِمَنْ شِئْتَ مِنْهُمْ.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
work. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So we were discussing this part of the verse. فَإِذَا اسْتَأْذَنُوكَ لِبَعْضِ شَأْنِهِمْ فَأْذَنْ لِمَنْ شِئْتَ مِنْهُمْ. What are these people that the verse is talking about? فَإِذَا اسْتَأْذَنُوكَ لِبَعْضِ شَأْنِهِمْ. When they ask leave of you for some affair of theirs. These are the people that in the previous sentence they were described. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَسْتَأْذِنُونَكْ أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ. You want to know who is truly asking for your leave? Those who really believe in Allah and His Messenger, which is you, those are the ones who are truly asking your leave, asking for your permission. And then, فَإِذَا اسْتَأْذَنُوكَ عَلَىٰ أَمْرٍ جَامِعٍ لَمْ يَذْهَبُ حَتَّى يَسْتَأْذِنُوهُ. These are those very people that when they face something that requires collective action, they do not go anywhere, they don't do anything, they stop at everything until they have asked leave of you. This is the importance of this group. These are the people who are truly believing in the Almighty Allah and His Messenger. So it is clear that such faithful people have gathered for an important affair and they would not take permission for a trivial matter. And the purpose of the holy phrase that is mentioned in this verse is some important and necessary job, because the verse says لِبَعْضِ شَأْنِهِمْ. This word شَأْن means that this is something important that is a necessary job that requires collective action. Thank you for staying with us, brothers and sisters. We'll continue our discussion in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
With reporters.
Together to honor and celebrate the significance.
In the Nigerian capital, Abuja, Muslim women and girls have held a conference on hijab, claiming that women are still persecuted and discriminated against for having hijab in the country. This is despite a Supreme Court ruling which established the use of hijab as a fundamental human right. One of the speakers at the conference explained that wearing the hijab is a religious obligation for Muslim women who have been directed to cover their bodies. She said it is therefore unacceptable for any discrimination against women on account of having hijab.
Sometimes the non-Muslims see hijab as a kind of barrier or as a kind of something that is anti-national development, feeling that Muslims are trying to show that they are Muslim is exclusive. But the truth of the matter, we all know that what we are trying to protect is the morality of the society. So the moment a lady wears hijab, it means she's being protected from the predatory eyes of the men.
The Coalition of Nigerian Muslim Women also staged an outreach in a park in Abuja where they engaged both Muslims and Christians, explaining the benefits of the hijab. Many women and girls were offered free pieces of headscarf, veils, and were taught how to tie them.
In a public park, you have different set of people, different faith, and different characters. So we feel that Islam is a religion for the universe, and then we need to share with everybody. And then this hijab being a very controversial issue in Nigeria, especially in our institution of higher learning and even in some few government establishments, we feel that we need to be here.
The group of Muslim women have insisted that everyone should understand that the hijab emphasizes the dignity, confidence, modesty, protection, and respect for females. They said the hijab is neither a symbol of the oppression of women nor an act of defiance against non-Muslims, and called on all Nigerians nursing this erroneous perception to stop in the interest of peaceful coexistence and respect for the law. Anjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Sometimes
scientists working with special electron microscopes in order to undertake cutting-edge research and product development. This is nanotechnology, the integration of science and engineering on a tiny scale, namely with atoms and molecules. A relatively new field of science and technology with perceived long-term benefits. One that Iran has taken very seriously and today is reaping its rewards. This is all in line with long-term goals and 3-10-year plans to develop nanotechnology in Iran with leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's full support.
که ما بتوانیم در همه کارهای کشور از این نمونه تبعیت کنیم و اون رو معیار قرار بدیم از این نمونه برای ما ارزش داره.
But that is not enough. The main strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran is to benefit from this cutting-edge technology. Therefore, according to officials at the Nanotechnology Development Headquarters, commercializing nano products is an important step and a top priority.
In 2001, which is pretty much the same time that other countries began to engage in nanotechnology development, we established a nanotech headquarters, and in many universities and research centers across the country, scientists started doing research in this field. We started with fewer than 10 scientists, but today there are more than 40,000 researchers and university professors working in this field in more than 150 nanotechnology research centers across the country.
Let me give you some statistics in order to explain what we mean by prioritizing. Right now, as we speak, we have commercialized 1,800 nanoproducts. More than 350 manufacturers have received nanotechnology production permits, and many laboratories are now equipped with or use nanotech devices and products. But the bad news is, in 2022, we sold over $1 billion worth of nanoproducts, and we earned $70 million from exports. Currently, 47 countries, including regional countries such as Iraq and Turkey, import nanoproducts made in Iran.
Advancements in a relatively new field of science such as nanotechnology is only one of the many achievements Iran has made after the Islamic Revolution, and definitely one that every single Iranian is proud of.
Over the past two decades, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been able to gain a firm foothold in nanotechnology, today ranking among the world's top five in the field. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The UK's first national demo since the International Court of Justice ruling on the Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza was another enormous gathering. People came from all over the UK. The sentiment here, very clearly, ceasefire now.
And I, for one, will not sit at home and watch this genocide played out on television. They said never again in 1948, but it is happening again, and it's a holocaust against the Gazans.
As with all the previous ones, this too was a broad spectrum of anti-war, pro-Palestinian sentiment, all here to push the government to act.
There is a sense here that international public opinion has had an impact. It's putting irresistible political pressure on the leaders here and around the world. And while the carnage continues, the calls for it to stop are growing louder.
In the run-up to the demo, an attempt by police to prevent it from finishing in Whitehall, the seat of government. Yet once again, people power prevailed. The UK government has been amongst the most hawkish pro-Israel states in the Western world. And the opposition Labour Party has not acted very differently with its purge of Israel critics from its ranks. Yet the Palestine Solidarity Movement in Britain has been the largest in Europe.
This is how we are showing those in power how we really feel. And how do we feel? We believe that a genocide is taking place in Palestine, and that it is our government and our arms companies that are weaponizing that genocide and are profiteering from it.
A permanent ceasefire is yet to be achieved. But even if there were one tomorrow, organizers say, this movement isn't going away. The shift in public attitudes towards Palestine and its liberation is permanent. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Free Palestine, the slogan heard around the world echoed through the streets of the South Green capital on Saturday as Israeli slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank goes on unabated. Palestinians in Seoul were also present at the event. Despite the bloodshed of innocent Palestinians, Israel still enjoys the protection of Western powers.
South Korea has abstained from UN votes calling for a ceasefire, although the government has also refrained from fully backing Israel. Seoul does engage in significant arms trade, however, with Tel Aviv. Activists here today, they want that arms trade to stop and for the South Korean government to take a firmer stand against Israel.
The Israeli regime may argue its behavior does not amount to genocide, but since October last year, more than 27,000 Palestinians, mostly civilians, have been killed and almost the entire population of Gaza is displaced. Still, Koreans believe their voices and that of others can make a difference. A global protest is planned for February 17th to show solidarity with Palestinians. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Amid the Western aggression against Yemen, thousands of people gathered in the capital Sana'a and other cities to urge the Yemeni army to expand its naval operations against American, British and Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. They also pledged to continue supporting Palestinians at all costs.
Our message to the forces of American Zionist aggression is that you need to stop killing women, children, and defenseless people in Gaza. God has blessed us with Islam, and we will not abandon our brothers in Palestine. The Westerners will see what we will do under the leadership of Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi, who does what he says.
Our hearts are broken over what's happening in Gaza, including crimes, starvation, and the siege imposed on the people of Gaza. They want those who survived the bombing to starve to death.
Protesters also slammed the European Union's bid to send military forces to the Red Sea, aiming to protect Israeli maritime navigation. The demonstrators said this move will escalate the conflict, since the Yemeni army will have the right to add European vessels to its list of targets.
The European Union is America's plaything. They are indeed many countries, but they follow America's orders to serve American interests. We call the Prosperity Alliance the Suicide Alliance because they commit suicide when they fight us. And we will not change our position no matter how much they threaten us and no matter how large a force they mobilize to fight us.
Any European force that comes to the Red Sea will have the same fate as the American and British forces, meaning that they will become legitimate targets for the Yemeni naval operations and will be hit daily by the Yemeni missile strikes.
Earlier, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, stated that U.S. attempts to seek help from China mediation to stop Yemen's naval operations show the failure of the U.S. and U.K. in their aggression. He also criticized Arab countries for exporting goods to Israel, calling it an act of betrayal as Palestinians starve to death in the besieged Gaza.
Despite the U.S. and U.K. airstrikes, people here insist that Yemeni naval operations should continue as long as the genocidal war on Gaza rages on. They urge their army to target the interests of any party that supports the Israeli regime. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Born of political exiles brought to the Cape of Good Hope by Dutch colonialists, the old Malay quarter of Cape Town, better known as Boerkop, is reaching back to its roots as a location of protest by raising a flag for Palestine. The houses of Boerkop have always been painted in eye-catching colors, but the walls of these homes have now taken on a whole new meaning. Tourists regularly frequent this area, and the paintings here convey a message that will travel around the world.
As Palestinians continue to endure the deadly Israeli onslaught on Gaza,
A young South African nurse has taken the initiative by painting what some say is the largest mural of its kind for Palestine. He says by painting this large Palestinian flag in a location overlooking the Cape Town Central Business District, Palestine cannot be ignored.
With tourism comes photography, and I decided to allow the world to protest inadvertently from every angle, from every ad, from every Instagram post. Anybody who comes to Book Up will be for Palestine.
Since launching the Murals for Gaza campaign, Khirdin says scores of residents have asked that their walls be painted to demonstrate support for Palestine. The project has also been taken up in other communities.
I'm just happy that I'm going to get it on my wall, because we have all the people walking down here, and it tells a big story. It tells a tremendous story about the genocide that's what's happening.
If the mainstream media will not report on the atrocities being committed in Gaza, then the walls will speak. That is what we're working with. So we are just making that. Every wall is going to tell a story from every angle, from the birth of Zionism to the atrocities being committed to the strength and unity of this particular neighborhood on where we stand in the genocide.
Work up on the periphery of the Cape Town CBD has had to contend with its own struggle of gentrification, as big business and foreigners have tried to evict the traditional residents from their ancestral homes. So they understand well the enduring struggle of Palestinians against the colonial settlers. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
Hours after targeting the American destroyer USS Gravely in the Red Sea, the spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Yahya Saria, announced the successful targeting of the US commercial ship Koi, which was heading to the occupied ports of Palestine with several naval missiles.
The naval forces of the Yemeni army carried out a military operation targeting an American commercial ship that was heading to the ports of occupied Palestine with several suitable naval missiles that directly hit it. This operation comes only hours after the naval forces of the Yemeni army targeted the American destroyer USS Gravely with several naval missiles in the Red Sea. The hit was direct and accurate, thanks to God.
Experts say that conducting two operations within hours serves as evidence that the US-UK aggression against Yemen has failed to undermine the capabilities of the Yemeni army or halt their naval operations, and instead, the ongoing Western aggression will expand Yemeni operations even further.
These operations are a message that the Yemeni armed forces are in a state of high alert. After targeting the American destroyer Gravely, the U.S. thought that we could not carry out any other operation for 24 hours and tried to pass the merchant ship that was heading to the ports of occupied Palestine. But they were surprised that our forces targeted them. This is also a message that the American-British aggression has failed to limit the capabilities of the Yemeni army.
Following the Yemeni naval attacks, the US and UK carried out a fresh round of airstrikes against several positions in the capital Sana'a and other cities. US officials said the attack was carried out using F-18 fighter jets launched from an American military base in Bahrain.
Observers highlight that the Yemeni naval operations go beyond displaying military strength, rather seen as a humanitarian, ethical and religious duty to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. They assert that Western aggression will not dissuade Yemeni naval attacks, which are expected to cease only when Israel halts its genocidal war in Gaza. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Nicaragua has dedicated an avenue in its capital to the people of Gaza and Palestine. The mayor's office of Managua held a ceremony to officially name the street and a nearby park, which has been named Parque Palestina, in recognition and solidarity with the ongoing 75-year struggle against the Zionist occupation. In attendance were Nicaraguan solidarity groups and representatives of the Palestinian embassy, who together with the mayor of Managua unveiled the new street name.
Así, estamos muy contentos.
We are very happy doing this act in honor of the fighting people and their historical struggle and the unconditional bond with the people of Nicaragua. We are inaugurating an avenue with the name of Gaza, an avenue that is in our historic center of the city, and we are demonstrating that Palestine is there in our hearts, in the hearts of Nicaraguans.
Eso muy significativo.
It's very significant. This reflects the brotherhood and historical relationship between both peoples, both governments. In the midst of the Israeli bombing of our people in the Gaza Strip, Nicaragua has demonstrated many times its solidarity towards the Palestinian issue.
Earlier this month, the Government of Reconciliation and National Unity of Nicaragua filed a request before the International Court of Justice to join the case initiated by South Africa against Israel for the crime of genocide in Gaza, saying Nicaragua is determined to fulfill its obligation to contribute to preventing and punishing the genocidal acts that are being carried out in the Gaza Strip.
The children deserve to sleep in peace, women to live in peace. Palestinian families deserve to live in peace. That is why today we name this park with great affection, with great solidarity with the people of Palestine.
This is not just any street. Peace to Gaza is located in one of the most transited arteries in the historic center of Managua. Homage paid by the Nicaraguan people and their government with the just cause of the Palestinian people. Camila Escalante, Managua. Allah, Allah.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah.
However, thank Allah, our nation is now united, all are together. This election proved what type some of those people are. Until after the first election, which of course must be at the top of the list of the elections, and it was the election for the Republic. After that, we did not have such an election, and thank Allah, it ended in happiness and peace. They were not able to do anything and dispersed. They were not able to do anything in the society.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. This is the Spring of the Truth, and I am Bita, the host of today's episode. And I have the pleasure to be here to actually analyze some ethical and practical points from the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. As the ritual of the program goes, we are going to go for word of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the sentence of today. What makes similar actions different from one another is the ultimate goal attached to them that forces human beings to take such actions. The concept of intention or niyat is, in Arabic, holds a significant place in the Islamic faith. In fact, intentions are considered the starting point of any action in Islam, and they play a crucial role in determining the moral value and reward of an action. One way to achieve our goals is by setting intentions that align with our values and beliefs. For instance, if we want to build a successful career, we need to set clear intentions and take consistent action towards our goal. This could mean setting aside time to learn new skills, networking with people in our industry, or working hard to meet deadlines. By aligning our intentions with our values, we can stay motivated and focused on achieving our goals. Another way to achieve our goals is by visualizing our desired outcomes. This involves actually imagining the end result of our actions and believing that it is possible to achieve.
When we set a clear intention and visualize our desired outcome, we send a powerful message to our subconscious mind that we're committed to our goals. So this can help us stay motivated and overcome obstacles that may arise along the way. Setting clear and sincere intentions is a powerful tool that can help us achieve our goals and live fulfilling lives. By aligning our intentions with our values,